evening, everyone. This is host Terry Lynn Coop with the Blue Plate Special. And tonight on the menu, we have got novel and comic book writer Alex Figuera. And he's going to be talking about both his Pete Fernandez Miami mystery series and, even cooler, his comic book writing on the reboot of the Archie series. How are you doing tonight?
Good. Thanks so much for having me. This is a treat.
Oh, for me too. I've been waiting to talk to you for quite a while. Let's just start right out.
Yeah, I feel like
we
kind of hovered around each other on, in the world of social media, so it's great to chat.
And that's where most of my guests have come from, have been the incredible tribe of writers that I've met out on social media. I thoroughly enjoy it.
Yeah.
So let's just dive right in. Tell me about the Pete Fernandez series.
Well, the Pete book started, the idea kind of came together about a decade ago when I moved to New York from Miami. And I'd always been a crime reader. I'd always read, true crime and Sherlock Holmes and Agatha Christie and stuff like that. And the classics like Raymond Chandler and Dashiell Hammett and those kind of books. But when I moved up here to New York, I got really into more modern, I guess, PI fiction, stuff like George Pelicanos' Nick Stefanos books, the Matt Scudder, Lawrence Block books, Reed Farrell Coleman's PI series, the Mo Prager books, and, of course, Tess Monahan, Laura Lippman's books. I loved the way they really use setting so vibrantly. I mean, you feel like, the Tess books can happen in just any city. They have to happen in Baltimore, and they're so, the place is so important to them. And the same with the Pelicanos books and, of course, Scudder in New York. And I really was curious. I was like, I'd love to find a series that does that with Miami, because I was, just moved to New York, homesick, kind of longing for, just that home, being home. But I found a few great Miami crime novels, and there are some good PI, Miami PI books, but I didn't find the same kind of series. And so I just thought, well, I'll do it on a lark, and I'll just start writing my own. And it started as a short story, and then Pete kind of just appeared and kept going. And that short story became a much longer piece, and that became Silent City. And by the end of Silent City, I knew I had another story in me, and it just kind of kept going. And the fourth book, Blackout, is set to come out next May. So he's had some legs, which is good.
Excellent. So who is Pete Fernandez?
So Pete, when you meet him in Silent City, is kind of hitting his bottom in terms of his drinking and his life. He's a washed up ex-reporter and now relegated to working the copy desk. And he's moved back home from New Jersey, where he was kind of a rising star sports journalist. And then his father passes away, so he and his fiance have to move back to Miami. And so he's on a desk job. He's drinking too much. His fiance's just left him, and he's pretty much stuck in neutral. He's not having the best time. And as all this is going down, a colleague comes up to him and says, "Hey, my daughter's missing, and I know you have this track record. You used to be this really great investigative reporter, and I'd love your help in finding her." And so that pulls him into kind of a darker, seedier world, the Miami underworld, where he's trying to track down this missing woman who he knows kind of tangentially through work. And he finds himself reinvigorated. He finds that this kind of gets the brain clicking in a way that he hasn't felt since he actually did do some investigative journalism. But he's still got his problems. He's not perfect. And I really wanted to explore the idea of the early days of a PI, as opposed to, sometimes, with some of the PI series, you find them and they're already established. They have their routines. They have their office. They have their license. And Pete is really not that. He's kind of an amateur, and we meet him at the beginning. And so that was one of the things I wanted to explore. And you see him make mistakes, and you see him go on instinct, and you see him get his butt kicked a lot. And he's not really the most stable guy.
Now, it says here that your books are infused with Miami. What does that mean? What is that?
What's
that tang of Miami that readers are going to get out of the Pete Fernandez books?
Yeah, I guess the idea is to show the Miami I know as opposed to the kind of touristy idea. You know, Pete goes all over the city. He goes through the poor parts. He goes through the suburban parts. He goes through the dangerous parts. And you really get a sense of the city as a, you know, the wide scope of Miami. Miami is not very concentrated. It's not a small, you know, tightly packed metropolis. It's spread out. Mm-hmm. There's cities upon cities and different neighborhoods and different cultures. And I really wanted to just kind of go beyond just the beach bum idea that a lot of, I think, some Florida crime fiction has, that it's this, you know, it is a tropical paradise for sure. But it's also a lot like other cities, and there's, you know, people with day jobs, and it's not all tourist and fun and, you know, fruity drinks on the beach. And with Pete, I think as your guide, you get to see a lot more of Miami. I joke with my friends, I'm like, it's the cheapest vacation, you know, trip to Miami you're going to take. And it's just got a few murders on the way.
Well, I mean, he doesn't. I mean, what city doesn't? I mean, come
on.
Yeah,
exactly.
What's a few murders? I mean, really.
Yeah, what's a few murders between friends? But I really wanted to kind of showcase the city as I remembered it and not, and as I see it. I mean, I'm down there a couple times a year, too, for significant chunks of time. So it's not like, I do feel like I have to research it more just to be correct, but it's not like I don't spend any time there either. And I wanted to show the Miami I remember from growing up and also the Miami that is now, because it really, like most cities, they change so much from even a couple years.
Well, that sounds awesome. So pretty much the series is, you do a little bit of a Matthew Scudder, you know, you take him through his drinking problem and through these different crises. And where's the character at now?
Well, by the end of Dangerous Ends, without spoiling anything, he's on the run. He and his partner are on the run. They've kind of toppled this murderous, you know, pro-Castro drug gang, but that doesn't mean that the gang doesn't exist in some form. So they have to go somewhere else. And in the opening pages of Blackout, you get a sense of Pete's new status quo. And it's not where he left off at the end of Dangerous Ends, the third book. So I really like to push him forward with each book, not just in terms of plot and what's going on around him, but his own personal journey. So, you know, when he starts in Silent City, he's got a major drinking problem and he doesn't know how to manage it. And he's not really a functional part of the world. You know, he's just kind of self-destructing. But by Blackout, he's got that part of his life under control. He's going to meetings. He's not drinking. He's, you know, trying to get his life in order and trying to repair the past that he's really damaged. And so to me, the Pete stuff really works on two tracks. There's Pete's journey and how he's trying to live a life after years and years of kind of self-destructing and addiction and really just poor living. And then also there's the mystery. But Blackout, the new book, those two things really tie together in a way they haven't before. They've always kind of been a little separate. So you get a sense of how Pete's doing and what he's doing to fix himself. But this time it's all one big problem.
Now, is this going to be an ongoing series, or are you coming up on the end of the story arc, or how's it going to work?
You know, it's a great question, because I find that it's really hard for I feel like there's two kind of PI series. There's the ones that are a little evergreen, where each book is an episode, but the characters don't really change. You know, like the Lou Archer books, the Ross McDonald Lou Archer books are great. I love them. They're a huge influence. But Lou doesn't really evolve as a character much from book to book. I mean, as you read the whole series, he'll be different. He's different by the end. But, you know, somebody's got to be different after 18 books. I mean, you have all these installments, but it's not a serialized thing so much. Whereas you have stuff like the Matt Scudder books or Tess Monahan, the characters evolve. So by the end of the series, they're very different. And I think Pete's more of the latter. So with each book, he changes a lot, and his status quo changes and his supporting cast changes. So I think that means the series has to be shorter, because after a while, you know, you start to kind of really push plausibility. Like, how many times is he going to risk his life? You know, this guy's supposedly smart and supposedly moving towards getting his life together. That's a long-winded way of saying, I think the series is finite. There will be a point where kind of Pete reaches his final chapter. I don't think we're there yet. I'm just tweaking a few little things on the draft of Blackout now, and it ends in a pretty surprising way, but I think after that we have at least one or two more.
Sweet. And what I always ask this on series books too, where's a good spot for somebody to jump in, or do they need to go back to the beginning?
You know, you don't have to. I try really hard to make each book feel like a standalone in that there's a recap and you get a sense that, okay, this character has some history, and I try to explain the key players when they show up. So, you know, I'm always fond of the one I'm working on. So I think you could probably jump in on Blackout or any of them because each one is a different little tentpole in his life. I'm a little bit of an OCD reader. I always like to start with the first one. So, you know, Silent City is not a bad place, and it's a little more self-contained, and you're meeting everyone for the first time. It's the pilot season, basically. So I just gave you a non-answer, but I think any of them would work. I think they're all structured to be kind of welcoming to new readers, which is really hard. I think it's a challenge because you're in the weeds with these characters, and there's like a continuity and a world building going on. But you also want it to be welcoming to people, and you don't want people to feel turned off because it's book four.
And I'm running into that same thing because I'm working on book two in my series, and it's like
right.
Our two main characters, they get reunited, and it's really, really awkward. And the reason it's really, really awkward, obviously, is explained in book one.
Right.
But you can't go back and rehash all of the past. You just have to try and set it up that, okay, these two characters are meeting again after this huge trauma. And how are they going to move forward with, like you said, little tidbits about
it's a balancing act
how they came together.
Yeah, you want to give a little bit of an explanation, you know, why are these characters behaving in this way? But you don't want to just feel like you're rewriting your first book. But it's tough. You know, you want it to be welcoming, but also you know you have this base of returning readers and you want them to not get bogged down in rehashing a plot. It's tough.
We know this, or heaven forbid, there's some little inconsistency.
Yeah, no, that's stressful. I always, you know, I don't know how you are. I'm not a big rereader of my stuff, which maybe I shouldn't even say out loud. I'll go back and reference stuff just to make sure everything's lined up, but there's a level of cringing when you go back and kind of revisit your own work. It's nice because you see, wow, I'm so much better, or I've improved, or, you know, I would have done that differently now. I find that interesting, but it's also, you do have to do that to some degree just to make sure your stuff is consistent.
Oh, absolutely. Like I found in book two, I accidentally reused a last name from book one of people who are not at all related to each other. And it's like, oh, you know, it's just some of those silly little consistency things like that. But I don't mind rereading my old stuff a little bit because sometimes it'll hit me, hey, this is actually a really good story.
That
and it gives
fun.
Me
you
a
know,
little...
I went back to Silent City recently and I was like, huh, this is pretty good. Like you impress yourself, which is always nice.
Well, again, because like you said, sometimes you can get so bogged down in the weeds, you know, you're only seeing the tree that's right in front of you and you forget that the whole forest is actually pretty cool. But
yeah, it's funny,
Mr. Fernandez,
Go
ahead, please.
You know, you mentioned that and I was thinking about Silent City as I was putting my finishing touches on this new one, and there are sequences in the first book that are somehow mirrored in this book that, you know, I should probably take credit for it and say it was part of this master plan, but I think it was just more of a subconscious thing. And you see a lot of the plots that are dropped in the first book kind of get resolved or at least, you know, checked off in some way in this book. So it does feel like, if not an ending, at least a chapter break for the whole series.
Oh, isn't that great when you get to do something that's like so smart and you have you didn't even realize it when you were setting it up?
Yeah, there's a dream sequence in the first book that kind of hints at his future, and then I started writing this book and I'm like, oh, this is it. This is the future. You know, I've just been doing this so long that I finally got to that point.
Hey, just sit back and take credit for it.
Yeah, exactly.
But now, you've been working on something else other than Mr. Fernandez, haven't you?
Yeah, I try to keep busy. I also write a lot of comics for Archie Comics, which is where that's my day job. I'm co-president of the company. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, let's start with that because, remember, I grew up with, you know, Archie and Jughead in Riverdale, you know, at the sock hop.
Oh, yeah.
And So when I first heard that, you know, Archie, the characters were being rebooted, I'm like, why? You know, to me that was like doing an animated version of Happy Days or something like that. And then
right.
I started seeing some of this coming out, and Riverdale's not the place I grew up. Why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
Well, it's changed a lot, and I think it was part of our CEO and publisher, John Goldwater's idea to modernize the characters, which I think is really smart because, when he joined the company about 10 years ago, I think the company was running the risk of becoming a retro brand, you know, like Betty Boop or Popeye, which is not a criticism of those things. It was just like that was the path Archie was on. And I think he really wanted to modernize the characters. And so part of that was making even the classic comics feel like they were happening today. So, you know, introducing a gay character, showing more diversity, making Riverdale feel more vibrant and less Pleasantville-ish, I guess. And then that path led the characters down to being rebooted. So you have a whole new Archie number one. It's drawn in a different style. It's still funny, but it's a little bit more teen drama. And, you know, you see the dividends of that. Now there's a Riverdale TV show. We've done stuff like Afterlife with Archie, which is a zombie Archie book. We've done Death of Archie. I've written Archie Meets Kiss, Archie Meets the Ramones. Now I'm writing the Archie's book, which is just following the kids as a band, you know, as a garage band and touring around and also running into actual real bands. So we have Churches, we have the Monkees, Tegan and Sarah, and we have a few more lined up that we haven't announced yet.
Well, that is fantastic. And it's been really interesting seeing it. Now, how do you compare writing for the comics and novel writing? What are some of the things that are the same and different?
You know, the big difference is that comics are very collaborative, and especially with Archie, I'm not writing a character I created, so they're already, you know, I'm playing in somebody else's sandbox, so you want to leave the toys intact. You know, I can't really come in and alter the characters too much. I can try my best to tell a great story, you know, within the restrictions of the world, but that's a big difference. And it's also collaborative in that I'm writing something and giving it to somebody else to draw and then that guilt goes to somebody else. So I'm writing a script and the artist is interpreting it and changing things because the artist knows better visually what it should be than I do. So the prose is much more solitary. It's just me kind of sitting down and starting from zero, and I can really do whatever I want. If I want Pete's car to blow up, I could do that. And I mean, maybe somebody would advise me not to do that, but for the most part, it's my show. But the Archie stuff is a lot of fun. I grew up on those characters, so getting the chance to tell stories about their friendships and what they do, playing music, and, you know, just I sometimes want to go back in time and just tell myself that I'm going to get that chance, which is really cool.
No, that's fantastic. And now, in the comic book writing, do you find you stick to your basic three-act character arc? I mean, how is it, again, different? Because I'm looking at some of the comic pages now, you know, and you're having to integrate the primarily dialogue into the setting panel, and, you know, you don't have to describe setting because it's drawn. So
right. I think it's much shorter bursts. I mean, the issues are much shorter, so it's much more like putting a puzzle together. Whereas with prose and a novel, there's no box. You know, the page doesn't stop if you hit a certain word count. You can still keep going. Whereas with comics, you have to leave some room for the art. You have to leave some room for the collaborators. So I can't get too verbose, and you can only really do so many words in so many panels. And there's a language to it almost. So you script the page out, you give direction to the artist, and then you dialogue, and then the rest, you kind of step back, and then it gets adapted by the next person, which is exciting. I mean, it's also much more immediate. With a novel, you're sitting there for months and months and months, and then finally you have this giant stack of pages that you probably don't want to look at right away because it's just, you know, it's a first draft, so, you know, it's a mess. Whereas with comics, you write a script, and then in a few days you start getting emails with the stuff drawn already, so it's much more immediately gratifying.
Like on the the Archie Zero issue, which is the one I'm looking at right now,
mm-hmm.
you know, you have that, you just have that single, this is the story of a band. And
right.
that's pretty much what you gave the artist as direction for that first page.
Well, I mean, you describe it a little bit. You'll say, you know, big splash page, Archie and the kids are on stage. It's a great concert. Everyone's super hyped, and the camera pans on Archie. It's really, you're writing a screenplay, and you can give some general
gotcha.
Camera directions and some ideas. But I also try to keep it loose enough, and I have this note in every script when I'm meeting an artist or working with an artist for the first time. I say, you're the director, so just take my ideas and make it great, because this is your thing. You're the artist. I'm just the writer, and not to minimize the writing, but obviously the artist is going to know how best to visually interpret your words.
Gotcha. That actually makes sense now that you explained it, because I've never been
yeah.
in on the writing and the creating of a comic, even though I've been a huge collector fan, you know, buy, sell, and trade for years. I never put a lot of thought into what the workflow was.
Yeah, you know, it really works out a different part of your brain, whereas I think it's mechanical and creative at the same time. You're trying to figure out, well, what's the best layout? Like, how should the panels break out? And what angle should the camera be looking at? And so you're thinking much more visually, which sometimes you don't do with prose. And I think that really helps my prose, because I'm thinking about it in a much more cinematic way, and I try to describe things as someone would experience a movie or something more graphic. So, you know, the words I do use, I try to utilize kind of clear descriptive terms. I mean, I don't know if I succeed every time, but that's usually the goal.
And again, that's interesting. And I've talked to several people where they'll say something that they didn't necessarily expect became a big influence on their writing and their writing style. And
mm-hmm.
that's interesting to hear now which came first, the novels or the comics?
You know, I started working on the novel and had my first comic story was when I was working at DC, and it was a short Halloween story. And, you know, I just always wanted to be a writer. So I knew I wanted to do it in some way, and I wanted it to be fiction. What's funny is that when I first moved to New York, I got a job in comics. So I was working in comics full time, doing publicity. And, you know, when your hobby becomes your job, it's fun in a different way. So, you know, then I had to get a new hobby, and that became writing novels. And now my novels are kind of a second career. Like this, now they're both jobs, which is amazing, and I'm grateful for that. But it's interesting. So I kind of feel like they both started around the same time. Like there was always a desire to tell stories.
Now, on something like Archie Meets Kiss, these
mm-hmm.
band novels or the band comics that are happening and come up, is this something you all propose, or do you get an email that says, okay, Archie is teaming up with Kiss, roll with it?
Yeah, no, it's a mix. You know, with Archie Kiss, I remember sitting in my boss's office and he said, you know, Gene Simmons wants to do an Archie Meets Kiss comic. What do you think? And I said, I think it's great. Can I write it? It was one of those moments where I just kind of saw the opportunity, and he was, you know, at that point I'd written maybe a couple of Archie comics, I have standalone Archies. So he really took a chance and said, sure, because it was going to be a big event for us. And since then we've had these other moments, like the Ramones came to us and Matt Rosenberg, who co-wrote the story, had a connection there. So we approached them and we kind of went back and forth and kind of explained what it was. And after that, it was smooth sailing. And other bands we've approached, like churches, we reached out to them and said, hey, this would be great. So it's been a little bit of both. Sometimes the band says, hey, we saw this and we'd love to do this. And other times it just comes up organically when we reach out to them.
That's absolutely fascinating, just hilarious. I can just imagine
yeah.
it. You know, Gene Simmons wants to do a comic. Are you down? Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, why not?
You know,
yeah, it was pretty surreal, too. We did some signings with Gene and Paul, and that was – we did an event at Golden Apple in L.A., and, you know, you're standing next to Kiss, basically. And, you know, they're not there to see me. They're not there to see the artists. They're there to see these guys, and it was pretty insane. Like, definitely a bizarre moment in life.
Oh, definitely. I can just imagine that, because even just to be standing in the shadow of, you know, it's like, hey, I wrote it. Yeah.
Yeah, and he was very, you know, very friendly, very kind about the story, and I know he read it, so that's pretty cool.
Oh, definitely, definitely. And now on to something else that you worked on that just came out, and I have to admit this is probably what I'm most jealous of, is you killed Dan Mallman.
Oh, yes. I was one of many who got the chance to kill Dan.
How did you kill Dan? Are you without coughing up too many spoilers, just kind of an overview of how did you kill Dan?
Well, I have to say this. I was really so honored to even be part of this anthology, which is for a great cause. And obviously, you know Kate and Dan, and they're pretty much some of the stars of this community of crime fiction. And,
yes.
You know, our tribe is not just about writers. It's about people who support the writers and who, you know, keep this engine going. And I think they're two of the brightest of that group. You know, they're always promoting writers, they're always working and always trying to help other writers and just promoting books. And so when this came together, I was so lucky to be invited. And I know Dan is a huge comic book fan, so I knew I wanted my story to touch on comics in some way. But it's set in Miami. It's a pretty dark tale, and it's very noir. It's very, you know, the protagonist is very down on his luck and not a really nice person. And somehow Dan Mallman ends up in Miami, and things don't go very well for him. He really shows up at the end, and and that's where you kind of see the connection to the story. And, you know, he dies. Spoiler alert.
That's great. I have it. Well, I mean, since the name of the anthology is Killing Mallman, you know, there's not much of a – there's not a big spoiler there.
Right, exactly.
And that's it. Everyone who's listening, you want to read this anthology. It's called Killing Mallman. That's Mallmon, 30 authors, one victim. And it's a series of short stories where everyone kills Dan Mallman in incredibly bizarre and unique ways.
Yeah,
and
it's really amazing. It's such a great lineup of writers, too.
And the proceeds of the anthology go to support MS, which is a cause very near and dear to me because my mother suffered with it. So I've been giving everybody who killed Dan as much crap about it as I possibly could, because it's just fantastic, and that's one of my great jealous moments that I didn't get a chance to kill Dan.
Well, I think maybe there'll be another one. So
more
killing of Mallman.
And I saw too that your Replacements anthology as well. Which song did you pick?
Within Your Reach. That was another fun one, and I was surprised that that song was even available, because it's one of their more obvious. You know, it's Paul Westerberg just playing by himself, and that was Jay Stringer was putting that together, and I managed to finagle my way into that. So I've been, you know, I'm not a huge short story guy. I have to admit, I don't write a lot of short stories. I kind of take a vampire's approach to it. If I'm invited, I'll come in and do one. But, you know, Jay mentioned it, and he knew I was a huge Replacements fan. He knows I'm a big music guy, just based on all the music mentions and discussions in the Pete books. And that's another, I really get my noir out on these short stories, because it's another dark, really flawed protagonist who's just kind of a creepy guy. And it's also, we did this noir at the bar here in New York, where we switched stories, where writers read another writer's stories. And the idea was you write something so gross or so disturbing that you make the reader kind of crack up or just falter. And so, you know, I had the honor of having Todd Robinson read that story, and I have to admit, he did crack up. He did seem really uncomfortable, so mission accomplished. And that's the story that's collected in the Replacements book.
Oh, that's fantastic. And my brag is I got to be part of Joe Clifford's anthology on the music of Johnny Cash.
Yeah, that looks amazing. I think those that book, I'm excited for that, and I'm really I really love the Springsteen book, so I hope he does more.
Oh, definitely. And that's actually how I met Joe, was through the Springsteen book. I was too late for that one, but I managed to finagle my way into the Johnny Cash one. And it's it's interesting adapting a song into a short story like that. I used Man in Black.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that's a good one.
And it's a vigilante story, essentially. Very,
oh, cool.
Too, very
I'm
short,
excited
very,
to read it. Joe's,
very
Joe's
short,
one of the best.
Very
He's
to the point.
Yeah.
So it's fun. It's the same thing. I hope he does more of these rock and roll anthologies as well, because it's brilliant. I mean, what a great idea.
Yeah, I'm going to see him in a couple of weeks at Miami Book Fair. We're doing Noir at the Bar in Miami, and we did last year. It was the first time ever that there's been a Noir at the Bar in Miami, so that was really cool to see a lot of people that were coming for the fair, authors that were, you know, crime authors that were there, but also to bring out a lot of Florida writers and Miami writers and have that Noir at the Bar experience. So I'll get to, he'll be part of that this year too, so that'll be great.
Is that the event that's happening on the 10th?
I believe it's the Thursday of the book fair.
Okay,
so.
Then it's a different one. I think the one in Tampa is on the 10th.
Right.
I got invited to go to that one, but I couldn't make it down. I'm actually going down to visit Pam on the 15th, and I'm going to stay down there for a while. And there's going to be a Noir at the Bar Tampa on the Saturday after Thanksgiving.
Oh, cool.
And that's going to be my first Noir at the Bar, so I'm really looking forward to it.
Are you reading? Are you one of the readers?
Yes, I haven't decided what I'm going to read yet.
That's exciting. I would, you know, if I had any advice about Noir at the Bar, I would, you know, I would just say keep it short and keep it with some bit of humor, like have some dark humor in there, and you'll win the audience. So maybe just read the Cash story. I think that would be cool.
That's it. I've got a couple of short stories. The Johnny Cash story is definitely on the bubble, and we'll see. But thank you. I appreciate the advice.
Noir at the Bar is such a great way to meet other writers.
Oh, yeah.
It's something I feel really strongly about. Like, I'll participate in the New York one a lot, and I started the Queens Noir at the Bar, and we've done that for, it's been like 3 or 4 years already, and we've had a lot of amazing writers, and it's been kind of throughout Queens. We've done Kew Gardens, where I live, Long Island City, and we had one at the Queens Book Festival. So that and the Miami Noir at the Bar have been a lot of fun to just kind of spearhead.
And I plan here on this show starting a Noir at the Diner.
Oh, neat. Yeah.
Where I would have, you know, however many is typically in a Noir at the Bar. What is it, about 5 or 6 typically?
Yeah, sometimes more. It really varies.
Yeah, come on and I'd probably do 4 for a podcast and do exactly the same thing. Do a reading on the podcast. And that'll be Noir at the Diner. You will definitely be getting an invitation to that.
Oh, I'd love to be part of it. Definitely.
and probably an invitation to something else too. Keep an eye on your email. I'm totally behind. I had this horrible allergy attack right at the end of summer, and all of my best laid plans just got laid waste too.
Oh no, yeah, that happened. Allergy season is brutal. I'm excited. I'm excited for your first Noir at the Bar experience. I think I was so nervous the first time I did it, but it's really so, so cool. It's just so fun. And even if nobody shows up, it's still a blast because you're interacting with all these people kind of in the trenches with you.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. So to finish us up here tonight, you've got the fourth Pete Fernandez book. And what's that called again?
It's called Blackout. And it'll be out May 8th from Polis Books in ebook and hardcover.
Great. And then what's coming up next for you as far as comics?
Oh, I'm co-writing the Archie's book, which has been a lot of fun. Issue two comes out in next week, next Wednesday, I believe. And then issue 3 is the following month, and that features the band Churches guest starring. And I'm actually going to be announcing something new pretty soon, but I can't talk about it yet. But the comic stuff is getting busier, which is good.
So do those come out once a month, roughly?
Yeah, roughly about every 4 to 5 weeks.
And they come out, I was noticing, they're available both in hard copy and for an e-book edition. So for anybody
who... Yeah, you can buy them digitally
online,
or you can go to your comic shop and pick up a hard copy. And then after a certain amount, after usually 5 or 6 issues, they get collected into a book form.
Oh, sweet. So it's also done in graphic novel or trade paperback version too, because I really like comics that way.
Yeah,
it'll
get a
be
nice
the same
burst
thing
all at once.
and they're just, they look good on the shelf, and you don't have all those different issues to deal with. So that's fantastic. I really appreciate you coming up tonight.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. This was so much fun.
Oh, absolutely. And I'll definitely want to hear back from you when we get closer to peat number four and find out what it is you're working on. Will you come back?
Oh, for sure. Anytime. Thanks so much.
All right. And in the meantime, I shall see you around Facebook. I've got a couple of little announcements here I have to make, and then we'll say goodnight. So thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you so much. I'll talk to you soon.
All righty. And everyone who's listening, I just want to remind you that this broadcast is owned and copyrighted by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. And you can follow the Blue Plate Special on Facebook to keep up to date with who is on the menu. We've got some interesting guests coming up this month, including the one and only Tess Gerritsen. And I'm going to be talking to Michael Ventrella on his book about examining the music and the work of the Monkees, song by song. So stay in touch, and until then, good night, everyone.